ear, bass on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod host, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
Hello, and welcome to another Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson. Well, it's the 50th episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. That's right, we've been doing this, well, okay, maybe not steadily on a weekly basis, because we had to take a little hiatus here recently, but 50 episodes in the bag. Well, after this one's done, it'll be 50. And it's a special one for you, too. Eric Billingsley, my son Isaac, and I, we all went to Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis. Basically, it's like a Comic-Con for horror movies, in case you're not familiar with it. And it's a great one. We got to meet some great celebs, and we also got to meet some great creators. They had Mask Fest going on as well, where some really cool masks were made. And, of course, it's just like a horror movie convention. There's some horror movies being shown, and just a lot of stuff to be found on the merchant's floor. And we had a blast. We really did. In fact, we'll start out the podcast with one of the interviews. It's the first interview we gathered while we were there. It's with James Remar, and you may know James Remar from either The Warriors, he played Ajax in the movie The Warriors, and also you may know him from Dexter. That's right, he's Dexter's dad. He was haunting Dexter, or rather guiding Dexter anyway. That's what we've got starting out is James Remar. We'll talk to him from the Horror Hound Weekend. I gotta warn you, the first part of this, we lost the audio from the digital recorder. Basically, somehow, some way, we got interrupted at the beginning of the interview, and when we resumed, the audio from the first part of the interview was lost. But Eric had his video camera rolling, and with the video camera rolling, we took the audio from the mic from that, although it's not a great quality, because it's not made for that type of recording. I mean, we were in a crowded hall. There were lots of people waiting in line to, you know, get autographs and stuff like that. You know, so there's a lot of background noise. So the first minute of the interview, it's a little noisy in the background. But when we get to after that first minute, then we get into the good stuff anyway. And that's where the audio clears up a little bit. So be prepared for that. So without any further ado, here is James Remar from Horror Hound Weekend.
Nerd Up Podcast.
From the Nerd Up Podcast, we've got with us James Remar?
Remar.
Okay, I want to get it right. As most of you know, and especially from that wonderful voice, Dexter's dad is most recent. That's where I became a huge fan.
Thank you.
You were basically a ghost throughout most of the series of Dexter.
Yes.
And, I mean, except for the first season. Now, did you have to do anything different to play that? I mean, because you weren't really there most of the time in reality.
Well, I'm an extension of Dexter's mind, of Dexter's imagination. If you believe in that sort of thing.
Okay.
Now, if you think that spirits can be embodied, maybe that's what I was. But it's, that device has been used in Hamlet.
Right.
When Hamlet spoke with his father, King Hamlet, he's a character who's present in his life. He guides and directs him and tells him what he wants. Have all those thoughts and considerations. As part of my construct of the character, because... Well, that's what I do.
Right. As an actor,
you got to create something that has a life. And it can't just be something like goofy, always there. So, yes, is it a part of his imagination? Is it an extension of his personality? Is it echoes of his past? Yes to all of those.
And he's still a separate character all in all.
He is his own character, as he's remembered by his son. You know, are filtered, and some people may have different recollections.
Right, and that was definitely true in this series. Since Dexter has ended, what are you doing next?
Well, I've been on a number of things. I've been doing a couple of feature films, something called Unnatural, and one called The Wrong Side of Right I just finished, which is a working title. Grey's Anatomy, I'm currently in State of Affairs for NBC with Katherine Heigl, which is going to be premiering as part of their fall lineup.
So you're definitely keeping busy for sure.
Thankfully, yeah.
Now, did Dexter give you any kind of a boost? Did it change the direction where your performances went or anything like that?
I don't know. Every job gives you a boost.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's not like I'm getting any younger. And anytime people see you doing something new and fresh and in front of the camera, that it renews their relationship with you.
Right. And
lets them know you're still alive.
And, well, that's for sure, too. But and it doesn't lock you into a single role. I mean, you know, there's always the haunting of the Batman syndrome where people are locked in that role. You're not going to be locked in as Deckard goes.
It didn't hit Wolverine.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Seven of them.
True.
He can buy half of Australia with the money he's made on that.
True. And I guess, yeah, when it comes down to it.
And it affords him the opportunity to do other things, like Les Miserables. There's nothing wrong with repeating a role.
Now, do you see anything, any dark films in your future? I mean, it was a dark character in his mind. It was a dark character because you're the one that taught him to kill in the movie or in the series.
Well, I directed his killing instincts. I didn't teach him how to kill.
Right, right, right.
Just to cover his tracks.
Yeah, cover his tracks
and
as the cop.
How to select his victims.
Did that, is that, look like another role you'd want to do tackle in the future?
Sure.
Okay. Anything, huh?
Yeah, I mean, no, I didn't say anything. Oh,
true.
You know, someone comes up with something that's got a Dexter quality to it, or Dexter feel, and it's a neat show. Yeah, of course.
Right. Well, I graduated with a theater degree. I was an actor in college, and I went into radio instead, and I chose not to do the stage because I can't do auditions, but I
can't either.
Okay, good to hear.
Occasionally.
Now, I've always wanted to do, and not because I am by no means a dark person, but I've always wanted, like the movie Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, I always wanted to play a role that dark. That's an extremely dark one. Did it ever come to your mind?
Michael Rooker.
Yes, that's right. Michael Rooker was Henry.
Yep.
Have you ever wanted to do that dark of a role?
I've done roles that dark. Gans in 48 Hours.
Oh,
an
my God.
Extraordinarily dark character.
That is, yes.
Yeah, it's not.
People look at that.
He's not a brooding character,
right?
But he's it doesn't get much darker than that.
That's true. See, most people look at that.
He got out of jail and just said, you know, to hell with this, and gunned down as many cops as he could.
That's
a very dark soul.
That is. See, most people look at that as a comedy. In fact, that's the way I do it. And then it's like, no, you got that dark. Yes,
you have to have the dramatic tension.
Yes.
You know, if you've got something pulling on you in a very, very dark, dangerous, exciting, up way, and then somebody says something funny,
right? You can agree.
The film can breathe.
Right.
You have to have that, you know, in and out. It can't just be like the whole time. And you know, he's a dark, dark character. He doesn't have a funny moment in it.
How much studying did it take you to do it, to get into that type of a dark? I mean, because you don't seem like that type of person by any means.
Well, I'm not.
How did it take?
Thank
how did
God.
You get into that?
I mean, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I just would have killed your ass.
Exactly. How do you get and study into that?
You know, everybody's process is different,
right.
Personal. And I spent as much time trying to look at authentic models from life that might, you know, turn out like that. The basis of it was the state-raised convict, like Jack Henry Abbott and Gary Gilmore.
Wow.
Take it from real-life models.
Right. Okay.
You know, and like in Dexter, you know, the literary devices, you know, go back to the classics like Hamlet. So it is all hopefully rooted in some kind of real technique, and not just seeing what sticks when you throw it against the wall.
Thank you very much for taking your time out to meet with me. And
sure thing.
Again, I had to keep it a little dark for the Horror Hound Fest, but I love you anyway.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, James Remar.
All right, so we got the first initial interview out of the way. Let me tell you more about what's going to happen on this 50th episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I asked every host that has ever been on here to, you know, record a little thing and contribute to this podcast, make it something special. Well, Mr. Sean Mitchell said he would, but he didn't. Shame on you, Sean. I hope you're listening. Also, let's see, who else is... Oh, yeah, Tim Coker. He decides to take a trip to Europe. Some people. And Tim Mattson is busy with a film festival. So, yeah, okay, we'll give that. But Eric and I went and enjoyed the Horror Hound weekend with Isaac, and let me tell you, we had more fun. But I did get Brandon Bell to contribute. Yes, he had no problem at all. In fact, he had a great idea, and I thought, you know, this will be perfect, because the basis of this podcast was started whenever Sean Mitchell and I started a nerd store, if you will. You know, we had Magic card games going on. We had tournaments, comics. We sold collectibles. And, you know, we had a lot of fun with it. But we turned it over to other hands because mainly, well, we were going in different directions. Well, Sean was going in different directions. Florida. He had an opportunity in Florida come up, so we turned over the shop to someone else, and they in turn have turned it over, and it is still functional. And so Brandon said, why don't we go back to the roots and talk about what the place is like now? So it's now the basement, a gift store up above. Yes, it is actually in the basement. And then I understand there's areas for gaming throughout the building. So they've got it really, they've kind of expanded actually. Billy Cooley, he's a friend of ours. I think we've interviewed him before. If nothing else, he has definitely been in the background when we've recorded some podcasts in the past. He's running the place now for the gaming aspect of it. And Brandon decided to sit down and have a talk with Billy Cooley. And so first part of this podcast, there's audio problems. Brandon recorded this with his phone, and I think, you know, we need to send that guy out with a full microphone recording system. I think that would be cool. Now, as a little teaser for what's coming up in the rest of the Nerd Up podcast for this, we've got interviews with Michael Beck. You may remember him from The Warriors. That's right. Also, maybe Xanadu. Yeah, well, you know, we all have some great movies. The Warriors is an awesome one. And anyway, and we also have an interview with Bill Moseley. You may remember him from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Chop Top. And he was also in Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. Okay, the movies didn't happen in that order. That's just my favorite between the two, how it works out. So we talked to Bill Moseley. Then we talked to an icon in horror movie. And, well, just a character actor. All because of his face. Michael Berryman. Now, you may not remember the name. But let me tell you, when you see him in film, you're like, oh, that's the guy. I mean, he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was in Weird Science. He was in The Hills Have Eyes. He's been in a lot of movies, and he's got that face that just, he makes it work, and he's a great guy. He was one of the most fun people we interviewed, plus the fact that he was running around throughout the whole convention talking to people. He wasn't just sticking around at his table all the time. Whenever he was out and about, he had no problem talking to people. He scared me a couple times. He jumped in front. I bought myself a fez at the convention, and I was wearing it, and he comes up to me, and I'm sitting there talking to Isaac, and then he pops up right in front of me. He goes, are you a Shriner? And I'm like, what? And then I looked, hey, I know you. So Michael Berryman, we'll have an interview with him. And so that's pretty much what's going to happen in the rest of this podcast. But right now, let's listen to Brandon Bell as he talks to Billy Cooley about what used to be the True Hideaway, now the basement. Nerd Up
Podcast. Brandon here with the Nerd Up Podcast, going to interview Mr. Billy Cooley for what is now the basement, which used to be Snid's Games and True Hideaway. Same location, different owners. Well, we're basically in a basement.
Yeah. What's going on up here? Is this all new?
Well, we still have the regular Friday Night Magic that goes on every week. That's modern and standard. Modern's at 6 o'clock and standard's at 9. We have a pretty nice board gaming table that we've just got laminated with a 1-inch hex grid. It's available for basically any war game or any miniatures-based game that you want to play, or just regular family games like Risk and stuff that take a lot of space. It's nice for that too. We've got a painting table set up. We've got a whole role-playing room and an in-house role-playing guild that's got active games going on every Saturday. A lot of different DC and Marvel deck building games, Cards Against Humanity, Munchkin, Fellas of Man, the favorite, some of the old stuff.
We were talking beforehand that the DC and Marvel games have been really popular up here recently.
Yeah, especially the DC deck building game. It's pretty well played about once or twice a day at least.
I know you've mentioned the RPG room now, and we're standing in it right now, and it is quite a nice room. It's got several couches in here. You tell me some of the stuff that you can do. You got a TV that's up back here and a laptop that's back here. So what all goes on in this room? I mean, what games are you mainly running right now?
Well, right now, through the official guild, we're running Legend of the Five Rings, Pathfinder, Vampire the Masquerade, the Old World of Darkness system, Werewolf the Apocalypse, the Old World of Darkness system. And we've got a lot of them that we're going to be running in the future. Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who, a new game coming out called Through the Breach, which is a Malifaux-based game. We have, like, the in-house guild, which is basically like a $10 a month membership kind of thing that allows you to sign up and participate in any of the open guild sessions. If you want to try it out, we allow you to test it out for 3 sessions for like $1 a session, basically, just to see if you're interested or if you like the setup or whatever. We got that. Or you can rent the room for $5 for 2 hours for your own private game if you got your own version. You know, I want like a nice neutral ground. And you're going to try and get some comic book based stuff and different like genre games where everybody I know, like I said, I've got a Firefly game that I think a lot of people would like to play. Game of Thrones, I don't know what it plays out, but I know a lot of people like that.
And you were saying to me before we started recording that you like to use this TV to do some features other than just running Netflix on it.
Oh, maybe. Sure. It's like a 32-inch, I believe, TV. We've got hooked up to the laptop as kind of a secondary monitor. So we can pull up anything on the laptop, like for Pathfinder, for instance, like I was saying, or Vampire. I like to pull up maps of the city or maps of the region, things like that. If I've got like a character I'd like to show people a picture of, it's nice because I can find pictures online and stuff like that of people that, you know, I really like and want to design a story around. I can pull that up and show it to the players and be like, hey, you know, this is what the guy looks like.
Yeah.
It just gives them a better feel for things, and it's kind of nice.
It sounds like a really well thought out RPG.
Put a lot into it. It's just what I realized.
And now out in the main, I noticed we got a lot of tables for, of course, your F&M night, Magic night.
Yeah, it seems like every F&M we keep having to add another one. In fact, last night we had to go add another table because we were running out of room. And it's been pretty successful.
We're growing.
Yeah, we had a King of the Hill tournament last night. It was a $5 tournament where basically everybody starts with a pack, and that's all they have to play with is the pack they get to begin with, and you add a few lands to it, and that's it. But the guy that won that ended up getting 2 Garrick, the Apex Predators, and they got a Court Calling and a handful of other really good cards. I think he walked away for his $5 entry with about $100 in cards.
Wow, so it's definitely growing up here. The Magic scene has grown in Robinson, people.
Yeah, for sure. And we've got a pretty nice casual feel to it. I mean, it's really not hyper-competitive. It's a lot of fun, friendly, kind of family environment and stuff.
Definitely when I walked in, being a big comic book fan, I've seen all the artwork out here, which is for sale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of it's signed. I think we have 1 or 2 pieces that are just the knife with the grass or whatever. But it's all Greg Horn autographed work, and there's a lot more that we can get to. There's a company, like a sculpture type of company, toy company, but it's for like the high-end collectibles market toys, and Bodakai, I believe is the name, and they've become recently a retailer for them, so they're going to be getting some of those names. Some of those pieces, like their action figures, but they're like I said, it's like the top-end collectible market, like sculpture work. And so we're going to have a few of that, pieces of that up here, and you can order any of that. And like I said, they've got those great horn works. There's a lot more that they can get, and they'll be getting different ones in. We've already gone through several. Some of them are just amazing.
And there's a nice Poison Ivy up there, too.
Yeah, and Poison Ivy is actually cheap. That's only $20.
Yeah, and I know we talked about some other of those work, too, on to the side, because I was interested in, of course, Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah, and there's some other stuff. There's a bunch of them we've gone through. There was one really nice one of Iron Man. The armor was all like a pinball machine had been taken apart, and he built his armor out of different pinball machines.
Oh, wow.
And it was a crazy kind of concept, but gorgeous piece of art.
Yeah, and
really original.
I know you're setting up on top of what is now, what is it called?
Blue Moon Creations is a gift shop and jewelry kind of store. She's got a lot of really nice stuff. A lot of it she makes herself. She's got some really nice incenses and some really great handcrafted jewelry. Different stuff for the house, decorations, various collectibles. There's a lot of nice stuff, especially with Halloween coming up. I'm sure somebody will end up grabbing it and make a nice door decoration.
Yeah, and then as we were saying, still up in the front area, we've got a lot of games to demo, which you said a bunch of that. And
yeah, we just got a bunch in this week. Like I said, we got that Sellers Expansion and Cards Against Humanity, any of that stuff. Thursday night is kind of our family game night. But that's basically the night that if you guys got anything better to do, you know, come on up here. We've got a ton of games. We've got everything from Cards Against Humanity to Walking Dead Risk. We've got old box D&D games, and we got the Pirate's Dice, like the Jack Sparrow movie.
Oh,
Dice
wow.
Play. You know, all sorts of stuff, and it's just all kind of scary.
Munchkin. I see Munchkin superhero out
and,
there.
Yeah, and that one's actually a version of Munchkin where instead of being based around kind of a fantasy genre, it's based around superheroes. You're playing superheroes and villains instead. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Definitely new specialties coming in up here.
Yeah, basically every week we're getting in.
Wow.
We're working on building the war game stuff. I'm working on putting together for the Malifo war game, tabletop game with miniatures and whatnot. I'm working on putting together a handful of box sets of those right now so that I can start demoing that within the next 2 weeks, hopefully. And then I'd like to become like a rep for that and start doing some kind of some Malifo stuff up here. It's a pretty cool game. It's sort of a steampunk slash Victorian gothic kind of a genre game. It's really cool.
The last thing I really need to ask about, that table out there, how long did that make take to get all that on there?
Well, we honestly paid a guy to do it, and he took all night. He said there were about 5,000 metal hexes in that hex grid that he had to individually pull out, and we're going to get laminated here pretty shortly. We're working on, we've already had one, we're going to have more, terrain building and painting workshop days, so to help build some terrain for the shop, help teach people how to build their own terrain, and for anybody interested in miniatures and painting them and sculpting on them, customizing them, etc., we're going to do different workshops with those.
Which I've seen you working at the painting table when
yeah,
we come in here.
That's my hobby.
Yes.
That's what I do. That's
so what kind of miniature games have you got going on right now?
There's a lot of miniature games. Warhammer 40K, we've got the set to demo Warhammer 40K, Warhammer Fantasy. Like I said, I'm working on demoing the set for Malifo here shortly. It's a really popular game, up and coming kind of deal. They just put out their second edition and it's real popular. Star Wars X-Wing game.
But you said that was a really popular up and coming game.
Yeah, it's a real popular game. A lot of people like that. It's really easy to play, then take a lot to pack around. And for those that aren't really interested in painting the miniatures for that come painted. So that's nice. You can just kind of buy them and go. The rules cards are all there. It's just kind of pretty compact and easy to get into. So that's pretty popular. They have a Star Trek version of the game also. And they actually also have a Dungeons & Dragons version of the game. Where
wow.
You're essentially kind of dragons fighting against dragons.
Oh, wow.
And things of that nature, siege weapons. It's a system that everybody's kind of jumping on the bandwagon because that X-Wing game just really getting off big.
So it sounds like you got anything and everything for card players.
Yeah. I mean, anything from checkers up.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a non-electronic game, we're trying to support it one way or another. If we don't have it, we're willing to try and get it. We, you know, a lot of the games we run, role-playing games, are even out of print. We're trying to run stuff that's just coming out, promos, you know. Like that.
Well, from Nerd Up Podcast. Oh, thank you, man. This is definitely taking off. I mean, you're under the hill and just got so much going on. So RPGs, board games, card games, you got it all. Nerd Up Podcast.
I think we need to send Brandon out with a microphone and recording system. So anyway, we went on to the Horror Hound weekend. We still got some celebrities to talk to. In fact, right now, let's talk to Michael Beck. You may remember him from The Warriors, or he got to roller skate with Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly. How about that? From the Horror Hound weekend in Indianapolis. Podcast. All right, we're here at the Horror Hound Festival. I'm Guilty Wilson with Michael Beck. You may know the name mostly from The Warriors. I mean, that's where I became a huge fan of yours. Love the movie. I've watched it like at least 20 million times, I think. I lost count after 19 million. But anyway, yes, lead role in The Warriors. Michael Beck, with The Warriors, I notice you don't wear the vest anymore. Have you ever been asked to wear the vest since the movie?
I've never been asked to wear the vest. I've been asked, where is the vest?
Right.
And actually, on the day that we wrapped the movie, I gave the vest to Walter Hill, the director of the movie. Oh. Don't ask me why, it just felt like the right thing to do at the time.
I'm sure he appreciated it. Now, the movie The Warriors recently has taken a resurgence. I've noticed a lot more people talking about it recently. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's become a cult movie. And when I first knew that, I have a son who's 31. When he was probably about 14, I think that's about ninth grade, right? 14,
right.
15. He came home with two or three of his buddies, and one of them dropped the F-bomb and said, "You're the guy from The Warriors." I said, "How do you guys even know about this movie?" And that's when I really kind of discovered that it had transcended generations and that there were younger fans. And then obviously, I think about 10 years ago, they released the video game.
Yes. Oh,
and
yes.
That brought in new people as well that had never seen it. But a lot of people, talking to fans through the years, dads turn their kids on to the movies, and granddads turn their grandkids on to the movies.
Definitely so. I've got my son here with me, and of course, he's in costume. You can't really see his face, but I've got
him.
He's
a good-looking guy. I really like the silver nose. It's working for him.
It's a genetic thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I've forgotten all about the video game because I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
He is, and I bet you he plays it a lot without me knowing. Recently on, I think it was either Family Guy or Simpsons, they kind of parodied. They had the little warriors come out and play with the bottles in effect. So, again, when you get on The Simpsons or Family Guy as a parody, that's when you, some people say, that's when you know you're stuck in pop culture. Yeah. How does it feel to be stuck in pop culture?
Well, none of us thought when we made this movie that it would, become a movie that is a cult classic that people, that movie came out 35 years ago, and there are still people who love the movie, and there's certainly the David Patrick Kelly with the bottles, and Cyrus in his speech, can you dig it? There's just so many iconic things from that movie that have been sampled by rappers and all kinds of things. So it's kind of cool.
To be part of that. Well, I'll tell you what, you just made me feel old, and I'm guessing it probably affects you every once in a while. But I saw it when I was, I think, as a senior in high school, maybe a junior.
Mm-hmm.
Me and a bunch of guys, we actually
snuck in.
Well, we paid, but we snuck into this one because
it's
R-rated.
Yeah.
And we loved it. We went back and saw it several times afterwards. And it made an influence. We were from a small town in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the gangs of New York, we thought that was really how they were like.
Nope.
A little foolish us. So
nope.
None of us actually ventured to New York. But
no.
When you guys created these characters, for the gang, the Warriors, what was that based on? Was that based on anything, literature, history?
Well, originally, an author called Saul Yurick wrote a book in the 60s called The Warriors. The movie is loosely based upon that. In fact, I think when the movie came out, Mr. Yurick was not thrilled with it.
Okay.
But now, within his book, and which Walter Hill took for the movie as well, he had based it upon Xenophon's The Anabasis, which is the March of the 10,000, which 10,000 Greek mercenaries went to, Persia or Asia Minor, wherever it was at that time, and they got cut off, and they had to fight their way back home. So that's kind of the spine of the story.
That makes a lot
and
of sense now.
That was in Mr. Yurick's book, and that was also within The Warriors.
I wish I'd have thought of that as watching the movie. I would have been able to impress my Greek teacher.
There you go. So, you've gotten an A instead of a B plus.
Well, let's just say that's good. We'll take that. Now, you've been in a lot of other movies other than The Warriors.
Yeah.
And I've got to ask you this.
Sure.
You were in Xanadu.
I was.
Is there going to be a Xanadu 2?
I think we've passed. It's just past that time. We were all hoping, but, they just didn't get around to it.
Well, see, what I'm thinking is, Linda Blair's here at this convention as well.
Yeah.
And she did Roller Boogie. I'm thinking Xanadu, Roller Boogie, team up.
There you go.
I'll get my
people
working.
It would make heads spin,
won't it? Definitely. Dun-dun-dush. All right. That was a good one. I like that. What are you working now in the future and the plans? You going to do anything? You're taking it easy? What's your life like now, basically?
What's my life like now? Well, the latest film work that I did was probably, I was filming a year ago now in September of last year, an independent movie called The Grace of Jake, which has not been released yet. I think they're trying to get it on the festival circuit. It was a low-budget indie movie. So that's the last film work I've done. Meantime, I'm dabbling at writing and doing other things, you know.
Nice. Yeah. What kind of writing do you do?
Well, I've written one book that's a narrative nonfiction book. So it's a true story, but it's written kind of like a novel. And I'm working on a thriller right now. Novel.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is Michael Beck. Everyone knows him from The Warriors. At least that's where I became the hugest fan. So also maybe from Xanadu. Yeah. Did you ever get to meet ELO or The Tubes or any of the bands?
Yeah,
really?
They were all there. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was always curious about that, whether you guys mingled. So that's all I've got for you today. You need to get back to your Horror Hound Festival, and thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, continuing on with some of the other interviews we did, I'll tell you what, this is the one that was interesting to me, because Bill Moseley, I've loved his work. Like I said, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, those are my favorite ones that he's been in, and I love those movies because it's not just a horror film. Okay, yeah, it's a horror film, but they just make it really cool to watch. And well, we got to talk to Bill Moseley. Now, we did this towards the end of the convention, the second day of the convention, which was a Saturday, and he was beat by then. It was a long day, and he warned us. He said, hey, I got to warn you, because you might get some crankiness here. But it turned around once he realized that Eric and I were former Salukis. That's right. We both went to Southern Illinois University, along with Tim Coker and Tim Mattson. And once Bill Moseley realized it, because he's from Barrington, Illinois, which is up around Chicago, Southern Illinois University is a popular school up in that area for some reason. Don't know why. Anyway, once he found out we were Salukis, it changed around. He became a lot more friendly. Well, I don't know if that's the right word. He was friendly to start with. I think he liked the fact that he was talking to some Salukis, or former Salukis, or graduates of SIU. Either way, it turned out really cool. We had a blast before and after the interview. And then right after the interview with him, we talked to Michael Berryman. And right before we started talking to Michael Berryman, Bill Moseley leaned over. He goes, hey, treat these guys right. They're Salukis. Yeah, let's go on with Bill Moseley from Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis.
Podcast.
All right, Guilty Wilson with WAKO Radio and with the Nerd Up Podcast. And here with me, we've got a great special guest, Bill Moseley. You may know him from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses. Bill Moseley, how's it been all day here at Horror Hound Weekend?
It's been a real travail. The good news is it's an overcast day, so there's lots of horror fans here. It's always good to be back in Indianapolis for me. And I've seen a lot of strange sights today.
Definitely so. Well, you haven't stepped outside apparently lately. The sun's out now. So that's why the Horror Hound folks are wrapping up, I guess. But
wow.
It's a beautiful day now.
That's too bad. We'll have to do something about that.
All right. First of all, I want to say I loved you in The Devil's Rejects and, of course, The House of a Thousand Corpses, the first one. It's just bugging me. How do you prepare for that type of a role?
You know, it's really nothing too mystical or arcane. I read the script a lot of times, and I basically just do what I'm told to do.
It takes a good director, then,
I take direction, yeah.
Okay, that's always good. Perfect actor.
You always try to make it real. I mean, that's really, you know, obviously you don't really kill people, but you make it real. You try to react in a realistic way. I think of actors as salesmen of reality, so you just try to find it and go for it.
Well, you know, my cohorts and I, we're all theater graduates, and we always love the aspect of acting, but we got into the technical side. But I always have to say that whenever someone, I see an actor play a dark role, I always wonder what's going on in the mind and what, you know, when you're doing the spots. Even though you're, like you said, you're taking direction, you're reading the script, you've got to be something in your mind saying, you know, there's something not right about this. Does that ever go through your mind?
No.
You just go through the role. Simple answers. I love it. Yes. What was your favorite role of all time of anything you've ever done?
I would have to say, there are quite a few that I've enjoyed, but I always have to go back to Chop Top, give Chop Top some love from Texas Chainsaw 2. Albeit, that was, 28 years ago, 1986. But it was the first time that I realized that you could do this for a living. And that you could really run away and join the circus and stay there.
Nice analogy,
yeah,
I like
cool.
that.
Yeah, because I grew up actually one state over in Illinois.
That's where we're
My
from.
Dad was a railroad guy. You know, so I have a lot of Republicans in the family and you know, industrial background, and so the idea of being an actor was not part of the options. For a happy future, and so I'm just glad it worked out the way it did.
What part of Illinois?
Barrington.
B-
Barrington, Illinois. Okay, yeah. We're fellow Illinoisans here. Yeah. I come from a little town called Robinson. We both went to school down at Southern Illinois University.
All right, Salukis.
Yes, amen to that.
Yes, Egyptian hunting dogs.
Man, I love a man that knows the Salukis. So.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're going to be here all weekend long. What has been the weirdest request by a fan?
You know, there really hasn't been a weird request. I would say there have been some weird-looking fans. There was one fan showed up basically in this outfit, and this being this is Kate Norby running away from the Kahiki Palms Motel in the Devil's Rejects, wearing her husband Lou Temple's face that Otis Driftwood has carved off and tied to her head. And a girl showed up yesterday exactly in this outfit. She had a blood-stained plaid shirt. She had the exact mask. It was amazing.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
And you know what that does? That warms the cocktails in my heart. It's nice to see people that are into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Cosplay, you got people, the superhero cosplay at the comic cons and everything else. But now you've got your own cosplay from your movies, so that you got to feel good. Well, Bill Moseley, thank you very much for taking
good.
Time.
I feel good.
All right, you worked with Dennis Hopper in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Yeah.
Do you have any interesting anecdotes, or what was it like working with Dennis Hopper?
I didn't really work with him that much. I mean, I was going to work, and he was just getting into breakfast most of the time. He would throw his golf clubs into the back of his rented Lincoln Continental, and he would drive to Willie Nelson's Country Club in Austin and play golf while we were sweating our, you know, kicking our little butts off trying to play the movie. So that was really what I knew of him. He was playing golf, and we were making Chainsaw 2.
Thank you very much for taking the time with us. Have yourself
a great
weekend.
Well, you know, any time I can do a favor for a Saluki, I'm happy to do it.
All right, before we get to the final interview from Horror Hound Weekend, I've got a little special thing here from one of our listeners, Alan. You may remember, episodes back, we talked about getting older and playing video games. And Alan wanted to throw in his 2 cents, so let's hear from listener Alan. Don't forget, you can always leave us a voicemail message. Just go to the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com webpage. You'll see a little banner on the right-hand side that has a little microphone on it that says, leave us a voicemail. Click on that, record a voicemail using your computer's microphone, and we'll be glad to play it back if you want us to, or just let us know how we're doing. That's all you got to do is go to nerduppodcast.blogspot.com, leave us a voicemail just like Alan did, and you could be on the next Nerd Up Podcast.
It's Alan. I just wanted to throw my 2 cents in on the getting older playing video games. I used to play a lot of first-person shooters when I was younger. What I discovered as I got older is my twitch reflexes have pretty much went away. So I've gradually moved to other things, although Left 4 Dead 2 I'm still pretty good at because I'm not fighting against other humans who have twice the reflex speed I do. But yeah, I'm tending to move to turn-based stuff. I played City of Heroes for years until they closed it down. But that's my 2 cents on getting older in video games.
All right, the final interview we've got from the Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis is with Michael Berryman. What a great guy. He was fun, and he's very talkative. They were turning out the lights on us on this interview. We, like I said, we tried to gather the interviews toward the end of the day so that, you know, we weren't interfering with the fans. They were turning the lights out. He was still talking. He was like, how rude. So we talked to Michael Berryman. And it, by the way, Eric captured a great gif when I was introducing the segment. Michael Berryman was staring at the camera. We had video rolling. We'll probably get that posted up pretty soon, but we had the video rolling. And while I was introducing the podcast and this segment and the interview, he was just mugging it up. So Eric created a gif, whichever way you want to pronounce that. And we placed it on the Nerd Up Podcast page. So if you go to nerduppodcast.blogspot.com in the upper right-hand corner, you're going to see Michael Berryman mugging for the camera. But a great interview, so let's talk to Michael Berryman.
Guilty Wilson here with the Nerd Up Podcast and WAKO Radio, standing right in front of Michael Berryman. Man, I tell you what, you walked up onto me and almost startled me a couple times during the convention today. You've got the face everybody recognizes. You are an icon when it comes to horror movies. How's it feel to be an icon?
It feels really good. I'll get over it soon. No, it's awesome, man. It's awesome. I never thought I would be an icon, or even in film.
Oh, yeah.
I got discovered by George Powell, who was the original producer of War of the Worlds, and he walked into my store in Venice Beach, California, at a little gift shop, and he goes,
you have a face. I go, yes. He says, it's really different. I go, yes. He says, here's my business card. It said Warner Brothers, George Powell. So I said, do you know who you are? You produce War of the Worlds, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Time Machine. And he goes, just calm down.
Five minutes.
Would you just be in my movie? And I go, yes.
And which movie was that, the first one?
Every dollar.
Doc Savage, The Man of Bronze with Ron Ely. I played the coroner.
Right, okay, wow. Wow, you're taking me back now. I mean, I know you're from Devil's Rejects, of course, The Hills Have Eyes. I've forgotten that you were in Weird Science until I came back here and saw you again. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, that's right. So, and I'm looking on your list here, X-Files, Star Trek. You've got a huge resume of great films.
It's because I'm old. See, you work a couple times a year. After 40-something years, it looks like you've been doing a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, it's just timing, or time.
Luck.
Luck. Now that we know your original, is that what made you feel like, hey, I can do this for the rest of my life?
Oh, no, not at all.
What did it take for you to say, hey, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life?
Being able to pay my bills. And that happened because George Powell had a casting director. It was Mike Fenton and Gene Feinberg, who were casting for another little movie after I did Doc Savage. I only worked 2 days on Doc Savage, but George was nice enough to make sure I got my union card. And I'm a union guy, so God bless AFL-CIO. George asked me if I would do his movie, and I did. I got my union card. And I was getting ready to homestead in Alaska. I got a phone call from his casting director that said, would you come down and meet Michael Douglas, Joel Douglas, Saul Zantz, Milos Forman, and Jack Nicholson? And I
Holy crap.
I go, oh, okay. So I went to Culver Studios. We had a lovely meeting, and they said, we're doing Cuckoo's Nest, Jackson to play McMurphy. And I go, wow, that's a great book. So I said, yes, of course. So then 127 days in production,
wow.
I had learned a lot, and I learned from the very best. Cinematographers, Bill Butler, Haskell Wexler, Milos Forman, director. I learned what the camera did. We shot with Panavision and carbon arc lighting. I learned everything as much as I could learn, and over the many years, I'm a very technical person. I know what the lens is doing, all of those nuances. I learned why the sound guy sometimes goes, ah! And sometimes why they go, that's no good, projection. All of these, everybody's there for a reason, and it's good if you're an actor, you're thinking of being in the business, or if you are in the business, appreciate what other people do. You don't want to show up and go, I'm important, capture me, I'm wonderful, because it makes for a long day.
Right. I know a few set designers that say actors are just the guys that stand in front of their props and sets. So, yeah. Did you ever have any inkling before this that you wanted to be an actor of any kind?
Oh, good Lord, no.
No? What did you want to be at first?
I wanted to be a veterinarian, and I went to Cal Poly, University of California, San Luis Obispo, and I had 2 years of pre-veterinary science, but then I learned because of my birth defects that my phalanges, that's the ends of your fingers and toes, are pretty useless for as far as, you know, doctoring on a critter.
Oh, okay.
You know, they have to work better than mine did. So I go, wow, this is kind of a, what am I going to do now? So I had 27 different jobs between then and being able to be an actor and make a living. I was going to homestead in Alaska and be a nature conservationist.
Oh, is that why you're going? Okay. That's still a nice job. Okay. Well, so I'm so glad you got into acting, because I've enjoyed, every time I see you, I'm like, that's that guy. And everybody is like, oh, yeah.
Well, it's really a gift to have an opportunity to tell a story, which is, I believe, one of our oldest art forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a good written script, well-defined character, a good director, etc. And it's just been a real joy. I've been able to travel to the Amazon, to Italy, to Northern Europe, Amsterdam, all over the United States and Canada, and I meet wonderful people everywhere I go, and people actually appreciate some of my favorite acting, like Below Zero with Eddie Furlong, The X-Files, for instance, Brutal with Sarah Thomas, it's a great role, my role of Leroy.
Oh, yeah.
I've worked with my dear friends Bill Moseley and Sid Haig, Ken Forey, and it becomes a family after a while. Then when we're not working, we do these wonderful conventions, and that's really a treat.
You get out there and get to meet the fans and find, well, I got to ask the same thing I asked Bill Moseley. What is the weirdest thing a fan has requested from you?
Well, this wasn't weird. I was in New York at a table signing autographs with Elvira next to me, and this beautiful woman comes up to me, and her boyfriend was about 10 feet tall. So I winked at him, and he said, okay. And
music off.
And so, Elvira says, Cassandra says, she's going to have you sign her breast. And lo and behold, I said, I have photos, and she just goes. So, being a gentleman, I said, yes, of course. And I took my Sharpie, and I said, may I please sign my full legal name? And I made up some names.
You borrowed a few. And
so you had to ask.
Nice. Thank you. That's a great one.
Yeah,
I'm going to remember that one forever now. All right. Well, real quick, what do you got working right now, and what are you doing in the future?
I still work with a lot of charitable organizations, Wolf Mountain Sanctuary. I work with a lot of people in law enforcement for mentoring for children, drug and alcohol awareness. I tell them the truth. I share knowledge I've learned from my good friend Lou Ferrigno about diet and exercise, healthy life choices. I have friends that have safe houses for battered women. I make a point of trying to make the world a better place tomorrow and have a smaller violin to stop feeling sorry for myself.
Nice. Very nice. Very, very worthy. Thank you very much for taking time with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Enjoy the rest of the con.
It's been great. If you've never been to a convention, show up. It's a lot of fun.
Podcast. All right, that does it for the 50th episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I want to thank especially the special guests, Bill Moseley, Michael Beck, Michael Berryman, James Remar, Brandon Bell, Listener Allen, and Eric Billingsley even got his voice in there a little bit. So we all had a blast. Tim Coker, Tim Mattson, we'll all be back eventually to do number 51, which is pretty much like starting over after the 50th, you know? It's just going to be kind of, no, we'll make it great. I can tell. I can imagine the stuff that's been building up with these guys. Something's always got to upset the Tims. We'll find out what it is. That's it for the 50th episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson, thanking you once again. Don't forget to help us keep it going. You can always donate, you know, like maybe say for the price of a comic. You can donate that if you wish. In the upper right-hand corner of the podcast, we have a little donate, just basically to defray some of the storage costs. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. I'm not begging for money. But if you do want to support a kind of like a PBS telethon here, if you want to donate and you want something out of it, buy a t-shirt. Or a bumper sticker, or a coffee mug, or something like that. We have a merchandise table set up. You can go to the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com page, and you can click on the link, or you can go to cafepress.com/nerduppodcast, and every bit of merchandise you purchase helps to go support. If you want to support us, go ahead and do so, and don't forget, tell your friends. We love hearing from you. Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.